Chapter 42. New York, September 1986. We had made a circuit of one end of the park, tracing the edge of the reservoir that is now named after Jackie Kennedy Onassis, and were headed away from the Upper East Side towards Midtown, where Alice said she knew a good French restaurant for lunch. The weather had turned grey and the water of the reservoir was a darker reflection of the sky, pinched and ruffled by the breeze. Alice manoeuvred her chair quickly, even impatiently, and I had to walk fast to keep up. I sensed that she had always done everything with great energy, and that she wasn't going to let old age and frailty get the better of her now. She was frail, though. I could see the blue-white of her scalp through the sparse white hair, the skeletal hunch of her shoulders beneath the enveloping swathe of scarf. As we walked, she asked about my life with Mum. Where had we lived? What had we liked to do at weekends? Did Mum read? Who and what did she read? Did she like art? Music? Aside from the ache of loss, these questions provoked in me a sense of unease because, banal as they were, Alice asked them with such evident hunger. "I've read all the interviews," she told me, "but, as I'm sure you understand, it isn't enough." I tried to convey as much as I could, both the big and the little things. I told her how Mum had always seemed to me just as gracefully dancing in her slippers as she ever had en point. I told her about the time she took me swimming at Tooting Lido and for ice cream afterwards, about how for my 14th birthday she baked me a birthday cake, accidentally substituting salt for sugar, then let me drink a whole glass of champagne in compensation, which made Alice laugh. I spoke about the Barbara Morgan show and the dark room she'd installed for me in the cellar. None of it would be enough, though. I could see that, knowing her favourite pastimes, the dishes she liked to cook. None of it could be a substitute for having known her, because without that, the answers to the questions were all in the abstract. As I was thinking this, wondering how she could be blind to the futility of it, Alice said, "I hope you don't mind my prying, but I so enjoy hearing you talk about her. It is as much the way you speak of her, you see, as what you tell me about her. It helps me understand how much she was loved." There was a long pause, the two of us moving together in companionable silence. Then, "You were very lucky," Alice told me, "to have had that sort of friendship with your mother. Certainly, it may be the difference between generations too, but I can tell you that that sort of bond is not guaranteed." She had knowledge of the fact firsthand, I thought. "I know," I said. "I always thought of her as my best friend." I saw Alice nod. "But of course," she said softly, "that must have made it all the more terrible when you lost her." I couldn't quite find the words to answer her, and was glad in that moment that she couldn't see my face. The restaurant was indeed very good, and very French. Inside, it was difficult to believe in the American city without. The look of the place was art deco, gleaming dark wood and chrome, glass-leaded in geometric patterns. "The original owner left Paris in the 30s, Alice told me, "and the food is of that time, perhaps superior even to anything I can remember eating there. Back then, though, I would never have been able to afford the better sort of restaurant." A waiter swept over, and Alice ordered us each a cocktail called a French 75. "There's nothing especially French about it," she explained, "except for the champagne. It's rather good, though." The drinks came immediately, twinly tall and pale and beautiful, with a waifish curl of lemon rind balanced expertly on the rim. I chose the confit of duck, because it seemed the right sort of thing to eat in a place like that, and Alice had poached trout and creamed spinach. We ate in silence for a few moments, and then Alice said, "So, Kate, you have told me a great deal about your mother, and you have already heard much, no doubt far too much about me. But what about you? Tell me, please, about yourself." I looked at her expectant face and felt something like despair. "I'm not," I shrugged and laughed rather desperately, "I'm not especially interesting. Not like Mum." It came out sounding like an apology, which I suppose in a way it was. She put her glass down, and her expression was rather fierce. "I shall pretend I didn't hear that," she said. "I don't have enough time left to listen to nonsense." Well, I gestured helplessly. I have no great talent like her. What about your photography? I felt my face grow hot. How do you know about that? It isn't difficult. Even had you not had the strap dangling from your bag, I looked and saw she was right. I do already know a bit about you. I have, shall we say, kept an eye on things. What do you mean? Well, she paused, as though deciding whether or not to continue. I visited your degree show at the Slade. I stared at her. She smiled, almost sheepishly. I work in the art world, Kate. It is a small enough place. I found out about it relatively easily, and I should tell you, I do not come to London often. I didn't visit the city for a full 2 decades after I left for Paris. But I was trying to make sense of it. Only about 50 people came to the show. I was one of them. Why should you have noticed me? I was a stranger. It was true, I thought. It was only upon closer acquaintance that one understood the ways in which Alice was exceptional. From a distance, she was just another elderly woman. Then I thought of something else. The letters. You sent Mum one once a year. Every year she performed. She nodded. Yes, seeing her perform became rather like a ritual for me, despite it often requiring travel to London. I only permitted myself one such excursion a year. It would have been wrong to do so more often, too much like an obsession. As it was, it became a way of being connected to her, I suppose. Then she changed the subject, perhaps because she could not stand to see the pity on my face. Tell me, she said, I want to hear more about your photography. I don't know, I said. I love it, but sometimes I wonder if I should give it up. Get a proper job. Alice looked at me quizzically. What do you mean? I mean a proper career. Teaching, perhaps. Or an office job. Absolutely, Alice said, if that is what you want. You should not be doing it out of fear, though. I once knew a young artist who had exactly the same doubts as you, who had a first-class degree from Oxford, a promising career in law. He, too, was fearful and almost convinced of failure. I nodded. He told me. He told me, too, that he wasn't particularly good when he started out. She seemed amused by this. Did he? Yes, I can imagine he might have done. Her gaze for a few seconds grew vague, pensive. Then it snapped back to me. Where are you living now? She asked. I'm still in the house I grew up in Battersea, where Mum and I and, Evie used to live. She digested this, frowning slightly. Then she said, I think that you should leave. Excuse me? I'm sorry, she said. I seem to be getting terribly opinionated in my dotage. We hardly know each other, though to me it doesn't feel like that, and already I am trying to tell you what to do with your life. She smiled. The beauty of it, of course, is precisely that it is your decision alone what you do with it. Even so, I cannot help feeling that a young woman of your age and talent should not be rattling around on her own in a big house full of memories. I don't know where else I'd go. It sounded particularly feeble, spoken aloud. A new city, perhaps? A new country? Is there anywhere you can see yourself living? Paris, I thought immediately, without quite knowing why. It was more a feeling, or rather a constellation of feelings, than anything specific. It was the discovery that, although there were memories there, they had not drained or oppressed me in the way that the memories in the house did. I thought of that vision of the lights on the water at night, and how I had remembered seeing them with Mum and had almost been able to enjoy doing so, rather than finding myself disabled by grief. But then I realized that it was where Oliver lived, that it would be impossible. I pushed it from my mind and shook my head. I'll think about it, I told Alice. The waiter returned to clear away our plates, then swept back with a dessert menu. I could imagine staying here all day, I told Alice, somewhat eager to shift the attention from myself. Alice nodded. I have done before. When I sit in here, she told me, I can almost imagine that I am back there, not so much in Paris, because I am there often, but in that time, when everyone was so unsuspecting, still of what was to come. Naive, you could say. People thought, with the first war and then with the crash, that we'd weathered the worst that could happen. Were you happy? Oh, ever so. I had begun to feel very much at home in the city, and I was busy. For the first time in my life, I felt useful. You know the play Three Sisters? I nodded, only because it had been on the O-level syllabus at school. Much fun is made of the sister, Irina, of her fanciful idea that work will give her life meaning, but I think she is onto something. I have always thought it rather unfair how disappointed she is by life in the end, because if the nature of the work is right, there is great reward to be found. The feeling that one has a place in the world, that one is useful in some small way, is not to be underrated. Perhaps my only regret was in not having someone to share my new happiness with. However, there was no one I wanted to share it with, apart from Tom, and I had altered things irrevocably there, I thought. You must have been happy for him, finding success in New York. Yes, I was. I was thrilled. It was the beginning of everything he had hoped for, back when I knew him in 1929. That first exhibition, small as it was, put him on the map. And it is such an extraordinary thing to witness someone's dream becoming a reality. That must have been how it was for Evie, I thought then, when Mum had her first successes. It was hard to imagine Mum not being the star she became, but just another hopeful. An even stranger thought struck me then, and I couldn't believe I hadn't considered it before. If it weren't for Evie, would Mum have found that path? Perhaps not. In fact, probably not. I wondered if Alice had ever thought of that. I wished I could have been there to see it, Alice continued. Reading about it in his letters, and increasingly in the newspapers, made it all feel so far away, hardly real. Once they even printed a photograph of him, and I wished I hadn't seen it. I didn't know whether it was the haziness of the newsprint, but I felt almost as though I were looking at a stranger.